Good day, everyone. This is Daryl as a Service, and in this episode, as you've seen, our headline is Enhanced Scheduling Experiences in Teams. We've also seen what appeared to be a number of messages coming back. So Daniel and I have got our work cut out for us this morning. Let's roll the intro.
The following episode was recorded live on YouTube. Check out our website at messagecenter.show for all of our episodes. Stay tuned to the end of this episode for an audio podcast exclusive interview.
Welcome back. This is Daryl as a Service, and
hello, I'm Daniel Glenn. How is you?
I wish I could answer them, but live chat's not displaying for me this morning. How about you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Although live chat is showing, but no one's there right now chatting, or maybe it isn't. Maybe it's broken, Daryl. We don't know.
Yeah.
But we do have a lot to talk about, but maybe not a lot to talk about on each one. Did I say that right?
Yeah, I think, would go with that.
I think we have a number of items in the Message Center this week, keeping us up to date, helping us plan for change and, you know, those break fixes for us. And so this week, though, we have a number of them that we've actually already covered on the show. So they are items that you can go back and listen to what we thought about, and we'll give you the show numbers and all of that, but we'll highlight the items, the reasons why they're showing up again. So we'll get into that very shortly. And live chat is working. Hello, Jamie. Thanks for joining us today.
Awesome. Actually, I might just share my screen so you can see it, right? Because that'll help. Because we all know this, that when we look at our own Message Center, there are some differences. Even delivery of the same message, there might be a week's difference between Daniel and I. Maybe there's four. It all depends. Let's crack into it. We'll start off with a reminder about self-service purchase capabilities for Microsoft Power Platform products, MC200092. I struggle when you've got like three zeros in a row and a long number, but that's the number.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you did a blog post on this when it came back.
I did. Yeah, so first off, we talked about this in show 121, about the timings, what the implications were, and basically it's just a reminder that Power BI has already started. So users, if you have not made the change, Power BI, or users can go out and get Power BI license on their own without your permission. I did do a blog post, so you can go to regarding365.com to see that, or I've got a short code, danielglenn.com/powerby, B-U-Y. So if you want to go to danielglenn.com/powerby, you can see my blog post as well as
quite clever, actually. Quite clever, I think. Yeah.
as well as a video explaining how to turn it off, if that's your choice and your organization's decision, how you might want to turn that off. If you haven't turned it off, then right now all of your users can go buy Power BI Pro on their own. So this is only for the United States, and it'll be rolling out to the rest of the world in February.
There is an episode, you can go back also and hear additional thoughts from the show.
121.
Yep. That's right. Some passionate thoughts in line with the rest of the community. But yeah, what's more to say except that here it is, and part two is coming shortly.
Yep.
We have some quarantine permission changes. I thought this was interesting. Have a look at the formatting on this. I know I'm using dark mode. We're making some changes to quarantine permissions, MC200-100, and it arrived January 13th with action to be taken by January 14th. But look at that, dark mode, it's got a lovely brown background, there's a yellow warning, and they've also highlighted block highlighted some text a bit further down about how this might affect you. If your organization is using role-based authentication or access control rather to manage quarantine, then you might not be able to access that quarantine after this change. There's a new role that you need to assign if you still want someone to have the role of managing the quarantine. So make that change before February 14th.
That's right.
Service health dashboard. Updated pictures.
Yes. So let me, if you would entertain it, Daryl, I actually had one. You just said we have some differences.
Oh,
there is one that I had that you did not, and I just wanted to mention it. And as a going back to what we talked about just a couple episodes ago. So this was in episode 126, and this was lobby control for dial-in attendees in Microsoft Teams. This is MC199245, and this is just coming back up to tell us that it is changing. Previously, it said it'd be rolling out in February. Now it's rolling out to in late March to those targeted release through mid-April for everybody else. Just wanted to highlight that one, that is happening and they've changed that. So episode 126 is where you go to find out all of our thoughts on that one.
There's going to be a few times you'll have to jump in to do that this episode, isn't it? Yeah, there's a lot going back on and through.
That's fine. So the service health dashboard, sir, report an issue. This is an interesting, isn't there? Because there's a couple things going on here. It's actually being renamed. It wasn't report an issue when it was announced back, summer of last year, in 2019, it was announced, but it was called report an incident. That's interesting, isn't it? I think it may be a little bit of a nuance there, but it's interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, incident, it makes you feel like you're kind of more observing it and in control. Like it's an incident that I bumped into the back of someone's car, but I'm not really in control of when an incident happens within my Microsoft 365 tenant, but I may be experiencing an issue. Just repeating the number for it too, MC200139. And this has got a bump again to say, hello, we're here. Please read this again. but this feature, which was available for a few tenants, is now available going wider, meaning that if you do experience an issue, not an incident, that you can go in and report it in your portal if you aren't seeing it in your Service Health dashboard. So you're giving Microsoft, I guess, hey, I'm experiencing this over here, or not so much me too, because it hasn't been reported yet, but you're giving them a clue as to what to look into quickly.
Right, and I think there's a little bit of difference because Microsoft uses the word incident for official things that are going on. So your issue may not actually be an incident. It may be something that is going wrong for you, but it may not actually be what Microsoft would deem as an incident. So that I think that's an interesting language choice there. So,
but it's a good way to describe it too, because often we might jump onto social media and say, is this happening for me? Is this happening for you? It could be quite isolated. So the services that it runs across are Exchange Online, Microsoft Teams, OneDrive for Business. Should be displaying this message, clever boy. SharePoint Online, Skype for Business, and whatever other means, which kind of covers everything.
Other. So,
so you go ahead and use that if you do need to report an issue, if you're experiencing something, but it's not listed there. We can continue.
Mm-hmm.
We've got. This is one that got bumped again, seemingly with no changes. Yeah, the What's New Management feature.
Yes, and this is MC200142. We talked about this in episode way back in episode 126. that was just two ago.
Mm-hmm.
But what you just said is what I found. I'm not seeing why is this showing up again? And maybe it is the differences in how they're showing where you're going to manage it. But I don't see any any updates
no.
To this. Yeah.
I think we've seen messages like this before where they've been bumped for visibility. This message came out just before Christmas. And, you know, we caught it and talked about it when we got back in the break. But I don't think a lot of people have seen this. And I believe that some messages like this are bumped for visibility. As if to say, hey, this is a great feature. Do make sure you look at it and use it. But yeah, you go back and check out our thoughts and reflections there about how this feature is used. I think we spent a good sort of 5 minutes or so checking that out. Similarly, another recent but revisited message, update to blocking sensitive information notifications for Outlook for iOS is delayed. So that the reason this one is appearing again. MC2112.
Sorry. And I think it's really, I want to call it out and congratulate the writers of this message, because they're making it very clear why this is showing up. It's not the same title that we've seen before and then have to go, well, didn't we talk about that? Haven't we seen that? Well, it's saying it is delayed, and that's what's going on. So we talked about this. It's a little bit further ago in episode 120, and this is where you could, and it really was talking about sensitive information. It was organizational messages for Outlook. You know, those messages that could pop up. You could block them from showing, so it doesn't, you know, show on the device, you know, without having to log in. So it's being delayed, right, Daryl, for iOS because of. And I think this is interesting. They're passing the buck a little bit here to to Apple.
Yeah. Hey, it's a limitation of a feature that's only available for some iOS users. And well, I'm paraphrasing here, but basically, if we can't deliver it to everyone that uses iOS on our platform, then we don't want to do that yet.
You think about all the calls. Is if, you know, Sally next to me has this feature and so it's blocking it, but it's showing up, you know, and the organization's not able to block. You can think about all the calls they will get too. So I'm sure that's part of it too. So yeah, go back to episode 120 for our take on this feature, but it is being delayed. I would assume we are going to get an update in the future when it will be released for iOS.
So that is available right now, though, for Android users, and then you can feel all safe and snuggly that your organizational data is not appearing on your lock screen. I use another mechanism for this on iOS anyway. I tend to hide those messages unless I've unlocked my phone. So that's my recommendation for everything, regardless of whether it's Outlook or whatever.
Yep.
A updated feature for end user access for phishing email. Again, it feels like we've talked about this one. What was the number on this one before?
It was
the episode
MC
number.
Oh my goodness.
We skipped that one.
No. Yeah, it's MC193076 is the item, and I can go find it.
Oh yeah.
We could, you know, maybe put it in the notes, but. This is just talking about they're adding a high confidence phishing email to the spam filter policy, and it's going to be rolling out at the beginning of February.
Right.
We'll put notes in there about, and it's also with this update, end users are going to get phishing emails in their quarantine view. So when you go to view your quarantine, there are going to be phishing emails there. They will not see those high confidence phishing emails because you know, false positives you want to see so that you can, you know, get those emails. But if the service is really confident that it's a phishing email, they really don't want you being able to release it to yourself.
The phishing techniques, and I think we talked about this last week, they're quite amazing in that, you know, you can say, here's a link, it's perfectly fine. And then when it's delivered a couple of days later, they'll tweak it so it goes to the payload. Not that one. Let's go into that one. New feature, Teams Read Receipt Rollout Update, which caused a little stir on the socials as people were excited to see it or not. Can I ask the chat room? We have at the moment who's checked in here, Joanne, Tammy, and Jamie and Phil. If you like to have your Outlook read receipts turned on so people can see that you've read that message, and do you respond to them when they are requested?
Yeah, and I,
well, the MC number.
I agree with you here. Yeah, well, hold on, Daryl.
Okay,
I just want to stay on that topic, though, because I agree with you in that Teams is, and the reason why I think you're asking that is Teams is this enterprise collaboration tool, communication tool, and a lot of organizations are starting to look at it from a perspective of maybe using it to replace email or heavily subsidize email. And so equating it to I'm reading your email in that sense is okay. However, if you think about all of the messaging tools we use, so use Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp, you can name them all of those messaging tools have read receipts. They do. Mm-hmm. You could see when the person's read them. In fact, a lot of them have it. You could see when it's delivered to the device, and then you can see if they've read it. So yeah. I, on the former kind of perspective, I agree with you. It is kind of in line with read receipts and email. But in the latter kind of situation where this is chat, I'm sorry, it's just like every other tool. And I personally feel like it's about time. So that's kind of my take on it. I did want to mention. We do have the number here.
Yeah,
right?
MC200276.
But you talked about this in episode way back, episode 96, about this read receipt rollout. And so go back, everybody, and listen to – it was actually Daryl only on that one episode. And so go back and listen to Daryl's take on this on episode 96. But I personally am great with this. I'm excited for it. So.
Yeah, now that it's here, I'm fine with it. I'm fine with people seeing that I've read my message. Admittedly, I don't turn them on for Outlook. That I don't know. Just
yeah, I don't either.
Just feels a bit different. But yeah, it's about setting that expectation. If people are concerned about whether reading that message means that there's this now delay between when you action whatever that request is in the message and then just deal with it. Talk with the person about that and say, look, when I read messages, I'm not going to necessarily respond to them straight away. And there's some good responses here in the chat room too from people about read receipts as well. So have a gander. We'll keep moving along. Yep. We have a new feature enabling Bing image search and YouTube search in one combined toggle for forms. Wow, what a mouthful. MC200395 seems to be just about creating a form and finding images for Bing or YouTube in one field. Yeah?
Yeah. Well, and it's also giving you the ability to allow your users to do it. So if you want to allow your users to be able to include them, and I think that's the reason why it's in the message center. This is not simply just you get to use images and forms now. Would that rise to the occasion of being in the message center? Well, depends, but I won't get political here, but depends on if it's a marketing message or not. But for this one, it is a really about if you want to turn it off, not allow those images from Bing and YouTube videos to be put into forms when they're creating those for us, then you could turn it off.
Mm-hmm. Just means that
and
if you need
MC,
to. Oh, yep.
MC200395.
Yeah, it just means you need to find the decorations in other places for your forms. And if you want to present a video, just do it within Stream. But of course, if you're going public with that form and sharing it out to gather information from outside of your org, then you have to use a different source for video. But yeah, moving along to...
So, Daryl.
Oh, yes.
I had another one in there.
Oh, you did?
That's,
okay.
Yeah, so we've talked about it before in episode 125. This is the SharePoint page difference visualization. If you talk, and this is MC198535. This has been updated so that to talk about the rollout dates. If you remember, this is just to see differences that have been made on SharePoint pages and versions. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to roll out in December and ending in this month. So starting last month and ending this month. But now it's going to roll out targeted release customers this month. It just says January, no early, mid, or late. With being completed by the end of February. So again, that is SharePoint page difference visualization, and go check out episode 125.
Yep. So differences there. I've just fished it out of dismissed messages. I haven't had it bumped back into my list, so I expect it'll probably be this week.
Yeah.
Back to the active messages. Interesting thing this morning, just before the show, I showed up active messages and it said there was nothing there. So I'm like, okay, what's going on? There we go. Our per site sharing links. Yes, new feature. Per site sharing links can now default to people with existing access. MC200127. I admit this is actually my go-to default. If I want to share something with people, particularly I think with... working in user adoption, I'm trying to get people to adopt using this way of sharing documents, and I'm continually pointing them back to, hey, well, it's here in the team that we all share, so I'll grab that link, the one where you have existing access, and I'll drop it in an email maybe to coach people through to where that conversation thread is and where that document is. So this is my default. Good to see.
And I think this is, and Daryl, this is really important, though, if you think about the functionality when sharing links now. Microsoft is getting very proactive. If you're sending an email to someone or sending a notification to someone about this document and they don't have permissions, then Microsoft's getting smarter and adding those permissions, right?
Mm.
Well, you know, what if that's not what you want to do? And this is one of those cases also where if you share a link with someone who has access and then they forward it within the organization to someone who doesn't have access, then they could be giving them access. So if your default is everyone in the organization, for instance, or the like. So I actually use this setting as the default. And I think it's, you know, for me, I think, or that's what I want to set it to. And so I think this is great that we're going to be able to default it to people with existing access. And what's great about this, did you say the number? MC200127. So what's really great about this is, again, being able to use this and just not have to worry about permissions when you're sharing that link. What's also good, Daryl, is we are going to have a deeper dive on this topic for this episode's audio version. So for those of our listeners and watchers on YouTube, make sure you subscribe to our podcast at messagecenter.show via your favorite audio podcast player, because you're going to get a deeper dive interview with a very special person, love her to death. I don't know, should we mention her name or not? I don't know if we do.
You have to now because you've done this big introduction.
So Susan Hanley will be on our show. I'll be interviewing her about this very topic. And so that'll be at the end of the episode. We tag those deeper dives on the end of the audio episode. So check that out. Audio episode 128, messagecenter.show.
All right. On to our headline for the episode. New feature, Enhanced Scheduling Experience in Teams, MC200243. We have had a growing, improving experience for scheduling meetings within Teams. And really, I think what we mentioned earlier, there is this goal to try and make it the default place to go. So if you are going to set up meetings, you don't necessarily have to go to your Outlook calendar and do that. They're changing up the form, and it will roll out, begin to roll out mid-February. And this form, as we can just gather on down here, is starting to put certain things in tabs, much like you see within your Outlook meeting invite, that you can go to a tab and you can see the scheduling assistant rather than clicking off and seeing it in a slightly different screen. Additional things that are added there too. Daniel, what else do you see in that message that, well, that screenshot that's different?
Well, for the screenshot, let me take one step back, please. I have one word for this message, Daryl. One word, and it is finally. I have looked at the scheduling experience in Teams, and from the get-go, it's been inadequate. It is just woefully inadequate when you're using it as your scheduling engine. And so to be able to get some of this information where you can really get a location picker, I mean, come on. Well, of course we need a location picker. The default was it's just going to be a Teams meeting. You don't need to be, you're never, you know, of course you don't need to be in a location. Well, yeah, I do. So being able to search within the location picker so that you can find those resources. I mean, that's available time. And all of these features we've gotten so used to using in Outlook that I have had discussions with people before about using Teams as their you know, app, basically that everything is. You can, you know, use your intranet there. You can find all your files. You can communicate with all your colleagues. Well, yeah, but I can't schedule meetings effectively, so I have to go to Outlook to do that. These enhancements are great, and I'm going to look for even more enhancements in the future.
Yep. It is driving towards parity with Outlook. I like that you can see the time zone, so you can set it to say, this is when we plan to meet. Particularly important for teams that do involve international people, and you're trying to bring people together across well, not even just Teams necessarily. It could be a standalone meeting. Remember, the meetings you can create in a calendar don't have to be in the team. They are those standalone ones that we've had for ages, like in Skype for Business. Okay. Add a channel, availability. The scheduling assistant, it's been there, and it kind of gave you availability, and it was, that's there. But because it was this scheduling experience was so lacking, people still continue to go back to the Outlook calendar. I think one thing that it will need, if you are running two calendars across multiple mailboxes, you're not going to see that to compare your schedule at in this tenant with maybe another mailbox that you might be connecting to. But yeah, plenty more to come.
My next message is one that you don't have. It's MC199669. We talked about it last episode. Mm-hmm. They're updating the rollout. It's use Power Automate to approve HubSite joins in SharePoint. Again, go view or listen to episode 127 about our thoughts on this topic. They're changing the rollout dates to be early January. So they started, it was supposed to be October to November. And then they delayed it, and now they're just making it very clear as to the timing. So it's supposed to be this month, January. It's supposed to be done worldwide by the end of this month. So wanted to make sure that we're well aware of what's going on there. So on to Stream that. Cloud recordings.
Updated feature. It's Microsoft Stream Cloud Recordings MC200501. This is whether or not you want to allow people to use cloud recordings, and there's an interesting twist to this one too. Currently, it's all about location of data, and if you are using cloud recordings right now, but it's not available in your country because of compliancy or data sovereignty, what will be coming is it will allow, if you have this turned on, it'll allow you to use the nearest data center in region, not necessarily in country. Now, if that's a concern for your organization, then you may want to turn it off until it is available in your country. But this setting comes with the twist that if you do choose to turn it on and you're okay with having it in a different country but still in region, and then Stream becomes available in your country, then there is no plan to migrate that those videos and information into your country after the fact. So my advice would be, if there is any remote concern at all, then just hold off until it is available in your country, because there is going to be no migration path to bring those videos across to your country.
Well said, Daryl. When I said huge, when we were talking about this, there's the big thing here. I 100% agree with you. It's that location of data. And it is, especially for those, like you said, the data sovereignty, where does that data live? Mm. You want to make sure that you understand this. So if you do not, if you have issues with this, number one, of where your data lives, or you may in the future, if you think, well, we haven't made a decision yet, maybe you need to think about this. The other thing is, like you said, they're not planning to migrate. So even if, you know, there might be something in the future where they will have a data center for you. So by the end of 2020, the list of regions for Streams will include, so they're adding UK, United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, India, Japan, Norway, France, Singapore, United Arab Emirates, China, South Korea, South Africa, Germany, Switzerland, and Sweden. So a lot. I would feel, if I was in one of those countries, especially knowing that I'm going to get a region soon and my data will be in my region, in my country, I probably would hold off on this. I would turn it off. So you need to know, though, it's going to be turned on by default. They're rolling this out and turning it on. So it's rolling out mid-February and completed by the end of March. So I think you're going to need to be on top of this and you know, be aware and make a decision on what you want to do.
Yep. So where to turn it off, jump into those meeting policies and do a global turn off for allow cloud recording. Just looking at those list of countries in the italics, the ones that are deployed, basically the ones that are not deployed, I'm actually surprised it says Singapore in there, but anyway. That's a long message, plenty of detail there. Hats off to the Stream team for being really descriptive. We'll go into allow OneDrive to disable Windows permission inheritance in folders synced read only, MC201573. Haven't really looked very closely at this because I don't think I've come across this situation. What does it mean, Daniel, that we're syncing read-only folders?
If you're syncing folders that are read-only, okay, then what happens when the OneDrive is trying to sync those, depending on the folder where it is, so, you know, if you're syncing to users/OneDrive, for instance, on your machine, then it will inherit permissions for that folder. And so what this is doing is you're going to allow OneDrive permissions, basically admin permissions, to change that permission inheritance so that it doesn't have to do that kind of, you know, worrying about those permissions and syncing. I'm liking the angle on this one that it is helping with performance. You know, anything that'll help with performance with syncing is a plus in my book. So I'm really liking that aspect. But that's really what it is about. You can read it. The thing I want to mention here on this one is it's a little different than most of our messages, Daryl. In that how you enable this, it's not a setting in the admin center. It's not even a setting in PowerShell. Although you can set it by using PowerShell, but it's not a connect. It's a setting on your machine. On each computer, it is a registered key. Ooh. So It's a register key to enable this policy is in the local machine / software / policy / Microsoft / OneDrive. And there's going to be a new key called permit disable permission inheritance. It's going to be a D word, and you're going to have to set that to one. So, yeah, this is definitely hardcore here for those power users. Talk to your admins about this, because it will be have to be rolled out by policy onto machines.
Mm-hmm. Next one, new feature, Outlook on the web. You'll be able to add a personal calendar for starters, or Team Snap account. This is MC201582. We've seen capabilities within Outlook to in the past to be able to connect to your personal mailboxes. I remember it was a few years back being able to sign into a Google account and get into Gmail, and effectively it was working like a POP account, I think it was, or IMAP, and so bringing that content in. So this will allow you to connect to a personal calendar, and just, I guess, it overlays a bit with our talk before about the scheduling improvements within Teams. Outlook here, or Outlook on the web, is allowing you to overlay a calendar. You might have your personal calendar and want to keep that separate from work calendar, and say, over here I'm going to go pick up dog biscuits, but I don't want that to clash with a meeting nearing the end of the day on my way home. So set that.
This is 100%, 100% for me a great thing, and it's very important to note they're taking security seriously here, that it is not that, you know, that your personal calendar information will be shared into your company. So people in your company are not going to be able to see that. It is, they will be able to see if it's tentative, busy, or away in your work or school calendar, versus, you know, that personal information. They'll be able to see that. No details will be shared, even if in your school calendar or your work calendar, your Office 365 calendar, you have set share all details, even if you've set that. And even if the calendar you're actually sharing, your personal one, into your work one, even if that one is set to public, it still won't share the details with your organization's people and in the calendar information.
So I just see this as it makes the calendar app on Outlook on the web like an app. You're just connecting to a mailbox and seeing the calendar. So,
right.
Gradually rolling out to targeted release customers mid-January 2020. So happening now. Yep. Gradually rolling out to all customers April 2020. So quite a gap there. Completed by July 2020. Wow, I haven't seen an update like this for some time. But yeah, take a look at it. And look, we didn't mention here, but I don't use Team Snap, don't know a lot about it, but I think it involves another kind of calendaring system for the team. Is that what Team Snap is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, so being able to add that there too.
Yep. So the next message I have, you don't have this, is Office 365 video. It's just a reminder. Office 365 video to Microsoft Stream migration. We talked about that in episode 125, so go check that out. This is MC201612. And this is all about just refreshing your memory about the time frames. March 1st is when automatic migrations start for organizations to stream from Office 365 video. So for those reasons we mentioned in episode 125, and we talked about it in depth, then you're going to need to take action by March 1st. So just wanted to highlight that, everybody, and make sure you are paying attention.
All right. Yep, I recall that's another one in my dismiss messages. Again, I'll probably see it soon. We are finishing off with an updated feature, refreshing Microsoft Search in Bing user experience. Now, we've seen quite a bit of work around Microsoft Search. That's MC201616. It's now, you know, GA and come into the Office Pro Plus experience, so that bar there. And this is more about being able to, just refreshing that page. So it's some people call it Bing for Business. If you are using it and you're making a good use of it, then that's another vector into Microsoft Search and being able to search your organization. I love
this work tab, Daryl.
Yeah.
You know, being able to say, okay, and I think really the highlight that Microsoft has made about this is you can search and find all your information, whether that's on the web, you know, internal, you'll be able to find the answer that you're looking for. You don't have to first think, well, should I do internal and then go find it? Oh, I can't find it. Now go external, you know. But being able to say, no, I know it's work. So click the work tab and be able to see only work organizational content in those search results. It's really cool.
Mm. Yeah, the earlier version just had it as a bar at the top, and then you would work your way through the different types of search results for your org and scroll on down to any Bing results. But yeah, I do like that tab as well. Have dropped the padlock there to just let people know and reassure them that this work information is secure. It's not available to everyone on the net. It's only available because your organization has chosen to turn Microsoft's search on with Bing.
And Daryl, you thought that was the last message. Another message, one more. It's just a timing change. It's announced when dial-in users join and leave a meeting in Microsoft Teams. And that we talked about that in episode 126. So they've just refreshed that to say, instead of January, which was the original timing, it's now rolling out target release late March and completed by mid-April. So they're delaying it pretty greatly here. So just wanted to highlight that for everyone. And that's MC199244.
So I guess summing this up with a number of messages that have been resurfaced, updated, new delivery times, and that it's a hard job, isn't it, to keep your eye on this message center and keep yourself up to date and then filter through and understand what is impacting my organization, what has changed, what do I need to pass on through to my people to keep them prepared. So thanks for hanging in with us. We did want to try and do right by these messages, and although some of them we've had to race through, as Daniel's gratefully put all those previous episode numbers together, then maybe we can refer to those to get the full explanation. But thanks for joining in. Thanks for hanging in for a good 3/4 of an hour. And we'll see you again next time. Bye for now.
Join us poolside and dive into the detail when we interview experts about upcoming updates and changes. And now, an audio podcast exclusive interview.
Hello, everyone. Today, we are talking about the announcement per site sharing links, the being able to set defaults for existing access. And so we wanted to dive a little deeper in this announcement. So today, we have Susan Hanley, a SharePoint consultant and Microsoft MVP. Hello, Susan.
Hello, Daniel.
Can you just introduce yourself to everyone? I have a suspicion most people know who you are, but for those that don't, could you just give us a little introduction of who you are,
please? Sure. So I go by Sue, and I am an information architect and business analyst, and I specialize in, like, I basically say all things people side of technology deployment. So in the land of Office 365 and SharePoint, information architecture, governance, user adoption, training. I do a lot of solution design work, but you can't ask me any hard technical questions. How's that?
That sounds good. And if you are at a conference where Sue is speaking, definitely attend her session. You're going to learn something. The only reason I would say not to attend her session is if she's given it at the same time I have a session, and then maybe come to mine. Thank you very much, Sue, for being here. So this new announcement is all about SharePoint sharing and setting the default for how people share content. Now, we know there's this unified sharing experience, right? When someone says, I want to share this content, gives them the opportunity to what kind of sharing they're doing, who they're sharing it with, Can they edit? That kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And the right now, the default is not people with existing access. Like if I already have access to the site, it's just a, it's kind of like the old school sharing, right? Where we would try to find the URL of that document. Do you remember back in the
old,
and send that as an email. So that's what I equate this to. What are your thoughts on this, how sharing has evolved, but then on this specifically, you know, what is the benefit of, you know, setting the default with for people with existing access?
So I'll tell you where it really tripped me up, or it tripped our team up, is that we were building an intranet using communication sites. And very often we would want to make a link to a document on the communication site.
Of course.
If you do that before, actually, we had the quick links web part, which by default takes the people with existing access link when you use it to create a link, we would grab the hyperlink for an asset and put it in, let's say, a text web part. Well, if you're not care, or if you're the owner of the site, someone would say, hey, can you send me that document? And you want to be a good citizen, you're going to send them not the document, but a link to the document. And if you grab the default link, because we can't right click on a document and grab the link, like as you said, like we used to be able to do, what we had seen was that people were choosing the wrong link. Effectively, the default link in our tenant was an edit link. And they were putting that on the homepage of the communication site. And what was happening is we were effectively giving away the keys to the castle. In other words, you're making a link on a site that is really for the purpose, it is a communication site. So it's really for people to read and or download, not edit the main content on your site. They're just supposed to read it. And so if you make the wrong kind of link on the homepage of your site, you could be effectively enabling the entire company to edit things like your policy or your form that you actually don't want them to do.
Which is risky, obviously.
Oh, yes, you know, very risky.
And I think the Drew Madelung and I do a workshop about sharing. We've done that a couple times. And it's all and kind of the specific what you're just talking about. It can even get risky with when you're doing only people in your organization, because when you set that, you're not really setting that the sharing of permissions for everybody. It's just kind of a policy on that so that someone actually has to click that link and then they're given permission to it directly. It can just mess up permissions. And so you're exactly right. You can't right click on that and get that, you know, quote unquote, real URL for that document. So bringing that, you think this is important for when you're sharing to be able to set that default for people with existing access. So it wouldn't change permissions, right?
Right. And so I believe that for me, that feels less risky. So if the default is people who already have access, then I can elect to change that and make it more open. I just feel like I'd rather have it, if you could read it, you could read it. If you could edit it, you could edit it as the default, rather than the default being something more open and with edit. But I think it varies based on whether you're talking about a team site content or communication site content. Because on team site content, I could see sending an edit link, even to someone who's not on your team. Because why would you be sending them a private document unless you wanted them to contribute to it? So I feel it's less risky on team sites, in, you know, from Microsoft Teams even, but on a communication site, I think it's extraordinarily risky to have the default be anything other than people with existing access. It's just too easy to send if you're the owner of a site or an editor on a site, it's too easy to send the more open kind of link. So I just think it's great to be able to do that in the UX. You can set it, you can change it in PowerShell. But now being able to make it much easier to, at the tenant level, having that be the default link, it means people will not accidentally overshare.
Yeah, and I think that is the key for me, is the accident of, oops, I didn't.
Right.
Even if you're able to, you know, you click we have versions. So even if they click on it and they go edit it, well, we can revert that back, but still it's kind of clunky. You don't want that mistake happening. And what you just said before about comm site versus team site, and I'd like to say, maybe take a step back and say, you know, most people, when they hear you say that, that is a site template, right? Mm-hmm. But what I heard you talking about was purpose.
Right.
It wasn't really about a site template, because you could be using a comm site template in a collaborative environment for a team. So that you may change the default and not want it to be, you know, existing access there too, right? So it really goes to what the purpose of the site is.
Yeah, I think that's, to me, is how you choose what kind of a site do you need.
Sure.
Do you want a site to collaborate with a whole bunch of people to create a deliverable, to work sort of behind the scenes to create an asset, or to accomplish a project because you have tasks to plan and meetings to attend? That is right. The intent of the group-backed team collaboration workspace. Whereas if what you're trying to do is share content with a small number of people are the editors and a large number of people out there are the consumers, that's the ideal structure for the communication site. It's just a site, small number of people at it. It's kind of the basis of what you need for your intranet.
Right.
And that, to me, is where the risk is when the default is not people with existing access. So here's the whole thing. When it comes to governance, my goal is no sharp edges. And an accident is a sharp edge. And what you're trying to do is prevent people from having that accident. So it feels to me that sharing should feel safer.
Yeah, no, that's, maybe we should get some stickers made up, Sue. Make sharing safer.
Or no sharp edges.
That could be the tagline, no sharp edges. I like it. I totally agree with you. I think this is a great change in organizations being able to set that default sharing link type. I'm really looking forward to this, the rollout being end of January 2020, starting for targeted tenants. I think it's going to be a great thing. So thank you, Sue, for your time today and your expertise discussing this topic. And I wanted to make sure that, is there anything else you wanted to talk about in this before we wrap up?
No, I appreciate
it. You think you covered it well?
Okay. Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
So, Sue, how can people connect with you on the interwebs, on the internet, Twitter, your blog, whatever? How can people connect with you?
So I'm much more formal on Twitter. I'm at Susan Hanley. So you have to find my long name, not my short name. And then my blog, I write the Essential SharePoint blog for computerworld.com. So if you go to computerworld.com and go to the blogs area, you'll find me at Essential SharePoint.
Wonderful. Thank you very much again, Sue. We really appreciate your time. And thank you for really sharing your expertise in this area.
Thanks.
Bye-bye for now.